Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hour number two, Darren Donick and Chase. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase McCabe, Darren McFarland here with you. Marquise Munson is back at the Wholesale Inc. Studios powered by RumbleOn.com. We say hello to the birthday boy, Teron Davenport, of ESPN Titans NFL Nation reporter for them. Happy belated birthday, TD.
Yeah, appreciate it, man. Hey, definitely turned 44 yesterday, so it's all good, man. 44 wins, so I'm good to go.
Absolutely. So something that the Titans have sent out to season ticket holders today is that they don't expect Nissan Stadium to be at full capacity this year. They're working with their season ticket holders on what to do and refund plans and all of that. This is not really unexpected that teams are having to do this, and our team here in Nashville has started that process.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that the Giants decided to do maybe a week and a half ago, the Steelers and some other teams, and it just is another testament to what we're dealing with. And unfortunately, not all stadiums are going to be packed to capacity, at least for the start of the season. And I think it's good that they're taking their precautionary measures to make sure that everything is as safe as possible. And it's a good sign towards the steps that they're making to have an actual season. I think that above all else is important. Now, obviously, some fans are going to be disappointed because not everyone is going to be able to attend the games. I believe they're refunding single game tickets. Fans have the option who are season ticket holders. They have the option to be able to, you know, skip out on season tickets this year and not lose their license. So all of that is positive as far as, you know, not having fans lose that seat license if they decide not to renew. So it's a tough situation, but I mean, you know, it's collateral damage.
And I know that these, you know, the media policies are obviously going to be different. You know, one thing that we've talked about before, you know, from in the type of reporter that you are, I mean, you build relationships, and I think the good ones do that. I mean, you have those conversations in the locker room that aren't necessarily on the record. It's just the, you know, hey, how's it going? How's the family? But that leads to other things. Obviously, you're not going to be able to have that type of access this year. Hopefully it returns at some point in the very near future. But, you know, as you continue to see these policies, whether it's with the NFL or with other sports, I mean, have you thought about some of that and how you're going to continue to be able to do your job effectively?
Oh, without a doubt. If you look during the season, talking with TD is just that. It's a talk that the players have with me, you know. So we break down a play on offense and break down one on defense. And sometimes you get a bonus of special teams, and it's, you know, sitting there at the locker, having a conversation about a play. And that's not something that I'm going to be able to do in person. I have looked at other ways to be able to do it. And it just, like you said, for someone who develops relationships and actually, you know, I don't want to say it that way, but makes that emotional deposit. Hey man, congratulations on the daughter, et cetera, et cetera. And it that does make it tough, but you know what? You just have to find other means. And a part of that relationship is having phone numbers so you could text guys. You know, I will say this, Titans PR has been really good. They've helped me out multiple times this offseason and, you know, in the 2 years that I've been here. So the job is still going to be done. It's just going to be a little bit different, right? And you're not going to be able to feel the smile from a guy when you're talking to them, or feel the emotions from a guy when you're talking to them. Like when I did my story on Derrick Henry and we talked about his grandmother and, you know, how she inspired right. him. These are things that are going to be a little bit tougher to do, but rest assured, we'll still get it done.
I can remember when we were leaving after locker clean out, after the postseason press conferences, Dean Pease retires, you and I are walking out together in the hallway, Mike Vrabel's standing there, stops, you have that conversation with him, say, hey coach, hey, appreciate it, you know. But it was, there was that personal relationship between the two of you, and I saw a big difference in him from year one to year two of just how more comfortable he was with the media. So with these new policies and how things are going to be different, I feel like that that's going to be helpful when dealing with him and talking to him more, just because he has more of those relationships now with the media.
Yeah, and I think that's really important. And for me, just in the different coaches, the four that I've dealt with, Jim and John Harbaugh, Doug Peterson, and Coach Vrabel, that's something that really stood out to me about John Harbaugh and Mike Vrabel. These guys will know about you. You know, they'll know if you have kids. Like they take that time to have that conversation with you. And I remember the first conversation I had with Coach Vrabel that wasn't about football. And that's really what she meant to me. Like, hey, man, you know what? This guy, he's a really good dude. You know, and I think that will help. And I think that's allowed him to be more comfortable with us as media folks. And, you know, we both understand media. We understand that, you know, if we ask a silly question, you very well might get a negative response to your question. And just the same, Coach Vrabel understands that if they don't play well, there's going to be stuff out there that's going to be negative because they didn't play well. So I think that's a part of just having a real relationship, right, man to man or man to woman, et cetera. And I think that's something that's really great about Coach Vrabel. And I think it's like that with all of the coaches. The Titans, I will say, have been one of the better organizations that I've had to deal with and or had the opportunity to deal with. And it actually, I wasn't expecting this.
Teron Davenport is with us from ESPN. So one of the things that's floating out there right now, we heard last week that the NFL, they may look at only playing two preseason games. The players, they don't want preseason games altogether. They're voting that they would like to just cancel the preseason and have training camp, and then when they hit the field for a game for the first time will be week one. How do you view it? We know how important the preseason can be for some players that are on the cusp of making a roster, or if they're not going to make that roster, getting game tape to be used to help get them a job elsewhere. So how do you view it?
Well, yeah, and I think that's the thing. It depends on who you are, right? If you're an established player that's on the roster, guaranteed to be starting, et cetera, you're going to say, well, you know what? We don't really need those games. But if you're that guy that's on the bubble, that's trying to earn not only a spot on the roster, but in the rotation, you want those games. And the bottom line is, there are a lot of guys who are being robbed of opportunities to prove themselves. As you mentioned, to get that tape, that play on tape, not only for the team that they're playing for, but for the other team. So it's going to be a bit tougher for those fringe guys. But, you know, I if it were up to me, you know, I would have the preseason games. But, you have to understand what's going on. This is unprecedented. This is a situation that, you know, we haven't seen before. And here's the deal. The ultimate goal is to stay healthy, of course. But after that, the goal is to have a season. And if this is what is necessary right to have a season, then so be it.
So we're about 9 days away from the deadline of a player that is on the franchise tag getting a long-term deal done. Has anything changed with you when it comes to Derrick Henry and if they get that long-term deal in place?
I still feel like it gets done. But, yeah, the time is definitely of the essence now. So, but I remain committed to them getting it done. I think that's going to happen. And it just goes back to, like I said, you have Coach Vrabel and GM John Robinson, you know, talking about, hey, we want this guy back for years to come. I don't think that's just lip service. I think that's true. And Derrick Henry obviously wants to be here with this team because – he agreed, you know, he signed the tag. And obviously, you know, there are, you know, things that would, ways that he would be penalized if he didn't. But if he didn't come into camp and everything. But I think Derrick Henry is going to be at camp. I think he's going to have a contract and both sides want to make it happen.
Yeah, and I feel the same way. I mean, I've felt pretty steadfast that they would get it done. And it may come down to the wire, but I think that if you look at the theories of, okay, well, he could play this year on the tag and then you tag him again, I don't think either side wants to do that. Derrick Henry did his part by going ahead and signing very early. He signed the franchise tender. He knew that that was a part of the process. And I look at that as
right.
a sign of good faith that,
exactly.
hey, I want to be here too. So I'm with you. I think that they end up getting it done.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I think it gets done.
Teron, tell us about DeAndre Walker. What do you think their plan is for him this upcoming season?
Yeah, I think DeAndre Walker is a guy that's going to be in the rotation. I'm going to caution everyone to not look at him as some type of sack machine. He's just a very solid football player. And the thing with me when I watched him at Georgia, what stood out was how he had those long arms and how he used them. He did a really good job of setting the edge. So that's going to really help, you know, in run defense. So I think he's going to be a key player in that. And one of the things that stood out in talking to Coach Shane Bowen when we had our virtual presser with him, he talked about restricting or cutting down the reps for Harold Landry. And I think one way to cut down the reps for Harold Landry and Vic Beasley, too, is to have a guy like Walker who could be a steady player on first and second downs. And they also talked about getting Roberson better on first and second downs. So I think Walker is someone that I don't know for sure that he's going to really help them as far as pass rush is concerned. Like, he could do it, but I don't know that he's going to be very impactful there. But I strongly feel he'll be a solid run defender.
Well, along those lines, and talking about the linebackers, Coach, you brought up Harold Landry. What can they do for him to be able to do this for, you know, I feel like his body is stuck in, like, college football mode. Like, there seems to be, because what was it, like the last four or five games he didn't record a sack. So how can they get it where he is strong from start to finish? How much has he talked about that, and what do you think – in your opinion, he needs to do to be able to sustain the long NFL season and to stay at a certain level at all times?
Well, yeah, like I said, it's a matter of regulating his reps a little bit better. That's what Coach Bowen said that he's looking to do. And I think when you look at Harold Landry, in my opinion, he's a pure pass rusher. He's someone that I would just say, you know what, pin your ears back, go get him, right? And I think that's the way he has to be utilized. And the thing with Landry that's so good is he could be effective with limited snaps. He doesn't have to play, you know, 70 snaps in one game in order to have an impact. So I think to answer your question, what they need to do is have him on a little bit more of a quote-unquote snap count to where you're not playing him as much on running downs. But when it's an obvious passing situation, that's when you do the snap your fingers and say sick him. And that's what Landry is really good at. And I think the same thing goes with Vic Beasley. So that's why I bring it back to Kamale Correa, who's an all-purpose player. Having Derek Roberson get better on first and second down and then utilizing DeAndre Walker in his second rookie year, I think that's really big to have those guys. And you can't forget about Reggie Gilbert either.
Yeah. Teron Davenport, speaking with him, NFL Nation reporter, covers the Titans for ESPN and ESPN.com. Over the years since they've been in Nashville, there's been like two positions that have been really spoiled. One, number one, is punter position. I mean, to have Craig Hendrick and Brett Kern, basically since they've been to Nashville, you're talking about spoiled
and
rotten. In my opinion, two Hall of Fame punters.
Yeah.
And honestly, the kicking game until last year, for the most part, has always been very, very good as well. I mean, I wouldn't put it to the level of punter because I think they've got two Hall of Fame punters since they've been in Nashville. Rob Baronis, obviously, it was fantastic when he was the kicker here. Even Al Del Greco early on. And even Ryan Succop until it tailed off and then his injuries got to. So I guess the question I have is we've never seen anything like last year where it became a running joke of, you know, how poor the kicking game was and how many weeks they would go without even attempting a field goal. Like, they got away with it last year, but it can't be your recipe year in and year out. So it looks like they're moving forward with Greg Joseph and he's the guy. How confident do you really think? Because we really don't know. I mean, he's one for one, right? And it was a short field goal. We don't really know what Greg Joseph brings to the table, other than he's been good at converting the extra points. So we know he's great at the extra points, and he's one for one a pretty easy field goal. How do you think they're going to play Greg Joseph going into this upcoming season?
Well, they have the undrafted free agent who will come in and compete. I believe he's from Arizona State, but they have him that he'll compete. But I think they're confident in Greg Joseph to start. And, you know, my thing is, obviously he doesn't have a proven track record, so he has to prove himself. But I think, you know, from them watching him in practice and getting the opportunity to see him kick, because you can create game-like situations for a kicker in practice where, hey, look, you make this 47-yarder, hey, practice is done. Guess who's breathing down his throat and saying, hey, look, man, you better make this field goal? The other guys, right? Because they want practice to be done. So I think, you know, from those type of situations, I think they've actually been able to evaluate him, and they feel like he's a guy that will be okay for them. But it make no mistake about it, he still has to be proven.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just curious. The first time they get fourth down and it's a 48-yarder, are they trotting Greg Joseph out there? Or if it's fourth and two, are they going for it?
Here's the thing. That's why preseason is important.
Yeah, I know.
You can do in the preseason.
I know.
So it just kind of goes in circles.
Well, there you go. You led me right to the end of this. So let's wrap up with, you know, already games 1 and 4 have been eliminated. The PA has said, we don't even want preseason games or need preseason games. Ultimately, how do you think preseason is going to play out this upcoming season? Is there going to be preseason football, or is there not going to be preseason football?
You know what? I think there's going to be preseason football, and it may end up just being one game, to be honest with you, just like a compromise for both parties. That's how I see it. Hmm. But, you know, either way, guys are going to have to – this is different, you know. This is very different because you're not going to have camp to – work some of those kinks out. You go to camp in shape now, but you're not going to have camp to work some of those things out. And I think that's what, you know, preseason games, like as much leading into camp, you're not going to have that. And then the preseason games to fine tune things. Let me correct what I was saying. And I think you need at least one of them.
Yeah. And if it is one preseason game, how do the teams handle one preseason game? Because, you know, last preseason, there were certain teams that didn't even play their starters. Starters barely played, maybe played in one preseason game. So how do teams, and I guess I'm not going to ask you to speak for all the other teams, we'll just say, how's Mike Vrabel and John Robinson and the Titans handle one preseason game? Do the starters see the field? Are they there for a series, a quarter, a half? Do they not see the field? How do you think they would play out one preseason game?
Well, every season during camp, you always have those keywords, right? During the off season and camp. What's the keyword this year? Continuity. So for the Titans, they're in really good shape because you have 10 out of 11 starters returning on offense. And the one guy that is a quote unquote new starter started 4 games for you last year and multiple games before. So I think they're in good shape and they don't really have a lot of kinks to work out. Outside of that kicking game, I think they need to get the rookies acclimated. Isaiah Wilson is a guy, Christian Fulton, Darrington Evans, they got to get those guys in. They got to see what they have in Murchison. These are all guys that are going to contribute quickly. So I think for overall, the Titans are in good shape, and they don't absolutely need a preseason outside of that kicking and their rookies.
Interesting. Hope you had a happy birthday yesterday. Thanks for doing this and a good fourth weekend. And thanks for doing this. Have a great week.
Yeah, man, everything's been good, man. I went to see my guys over at German Performance Options, and I got a new car, and they got that up and running straight, you know. So, yeah, man, life is good, man. Double winning now.
All right. It's too bad you didn't get a birthday present like Bobby Bonilla gets, huh? You know, that would have been nice. 1.2 million would have been really nice. For
yeah, man. Well, you know, or one like Bruce Sutter, you know, for the Braves fans.
Thanks, Teron. As always, appreciate it. And we'll talk to you soon.
All right. Take care.
All right. That is Teron Davenport. Talking with TD is the podcast. Check it out every week. He does a fantastic job with it, and he is the NFL Nation reporter covering the Titans for ESPN and ESPN.com. It looks like the Ivy League is seems to be throwing something out there that they may be headed a certain direction this upcoming college football season. We'll tell you about that and more on the other side of Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5, The Game. I don't know if Marquise is sending that our way, Chase, if that's kind of the vibe he's getting, or bad company. I don't know. Or if that was just a random selection. Not sure.
This could go to Harvard, actually.
Oh, okay. We will get to that in just a second.
I know this. I'm going to make some requests because of the news that I just saw, and I am very sad now. We're going to need some Charlie Daniels coming the rest of the show because he has passed away at the age of 83.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I did not see that.
Yeah, just breaking.
I got some time in years past to spend some time around him. Cool dude.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I met him.
I knew somebody who was dating his son for a long time, so we were around them a lot.
Well, I got to meet him at Loveless one time, mm-hmm. and at a Preds game. He played at a Preds game, so really nice guy. Hate hearing
him,
that. Apparently,
met
it was
him
a
couple
stroke.
Times. Yeah, of what? Say that again.
It was a stroke.
Gosh. And Charlie Daniels, rest in peace. I hate hearing that news. What Marquise was playing was geared toward the Ivy League. Did you see where they are throwing out there? It's getting louder and louder and louder that their coaches are expecting their upcoming football season to be moved to the spring.
Yep, and if you think about it, when we go all the way back, and I know it's hard to go all the way back, but when you and I were doing a show from Kroger, when all this was starting that week, what was the first league
to
cancel
something? Ivy League. It was the Ivy League basketball tournament.
Yeah. So the Ivy League, they kind of see all this stuff, I guess, but I find that interesting.
And our initial reaction was, really?
Yeah, really?
Like, wow. Like, you're canceling? And then, that was just the beginning of what would be a crazy, crazy week. But, yeah, it was indeed the Ivy League that really came out with the first cancellation. And Marquise sent us a thing. I guess Darren Revelle tweeted out that Harvard has just announced that all their courses this fall will be taught online.
Yep.
And so you'll be taking classes online, and that tuition is going to remain the same, and it's about $50,000.
Sheesh.
So, yeah, there's that.
Still, see, I don't understand it because why, even though – from what I remember, some online classes that I took when I was at MTSU, for whatever reason, they were at times more expensive than the regular classes. But at least the tuition's remaining the same. I mean, $50,000 a year to go to Harvard is, that's a lot. but still, yeah, this is. I'm curious if some universities, if they're going to change on that, if they can't offer in-person classes at all, then will they change the price? But, because Harvard's different, but I'm curious to see what happens with other universities with that. But it also, that to me should start telling you things. If more and more universities are coming out saying we're going to be online only, we're not going to have students on campus, then I feel even stronger that football could be shifting to the spring.
I don't know. I'll say it again, and I've been pretty consistent with this message. I don't know how much – I mean, we're seeing stories, by the way, of athletic programs that are saying, I don't know how we're going to do this. If we can't figure out a college football season, I don't know how this is going to work. I don't know how we're going to make it. And I'm very fearful of that. What did I see? I'm trying to now I don't even want to throw it out there. I saw where Nick Saban, I guess, had made a comment. Maybe, Marquise, you saw this. What a college football season means for the city of Tuscaloosa, like dollar-wise.
Right.
And
yeah, I seen something similar when Greg Burns tweeted it as well. It was something similar.
Do you remember the amount?
I can't remember the amount, but it was up there. Let me go find the tweet.
Well, I know it was up
there. Greg Burns tweeted it before.
I hesitate because I don't remember the number, but I think this is what I remember. So I'm just going to throw it out there and say we're going to fact check this because I'm not sure if this is right or not. I believe the number I saw was like $100 million. That's what it's worth to the Tuscaloosa economy.
I can believe that. And that's my thing. If they end up moving for several reasons, but if they end up moving to spring because they feel like, one, we're going to be able to do things closer to normal, and whatever that means, but closer to normal, if we can do that in the spring more so than in the fall and allow, you know, some fans in, and that can help the economy, and it's safer, and that should be number one, that it's safer, then I'm all for it. But I think, like everything, we just don't know. We don't know with any of this if that is in fact going to be the case, because we've also heard that as it gets warmer, this thing was going to, you know, dissipate and go away, and it's not. Our numbers continue to go up. Now the death rate's going down, which is good, but the numbers continue.
The death rate has been going down for what, 10 weeks?
Yeah, and so that's very good. That's positive, but the numbers, you know, continue to go up of people that are getting it. So it's just you. At the end of the day, we just really don't know. I mean, we can forecast that it's going to be better in the spring, but can you definitively say, yes, it will be? You can't. You won't know until you get there. But I understand you got a plan now.
Gil Brandt has just tweeted out, I suspect what the Ivy League is doing by moving their football season to the spring will be followed by all the major conferences. They'll have to shorten the season, conference games only, to stay on schedule for September 2021 restart. That's Gil Brandt.
Okay, so I found the tweet. I found a tweet.
Okay.
Paul Feinbaum tweeted this. This was back in June, and this was the Tuscaloosa's Mayor Walt Maddox tells the University of Alabama Academics and Athletics has an annual of $2.1 billion economy impact on the city. Football only brings in $200 million in the city's economy.
$200 million is what it is worth, a college football season to the city of Tuscaloosa. Now you tell me how in the world, when you are counting on that and you're used to that year in and year out, and that goes away this fall, how do you recover from that? I mean, that's what I'm just so fearful of, is what is going to be the fallout of this, and so if they move everything to the spring.
Yeah, I mean,
how are some of these schools going to survive? The athletic departments, how do they survive? I don't know the answer to that.
Because you've brought that up. We all look at football and go, oh yeah, well football will be fine if you move it. But what about rowing? What about bowling? What about, you know, some of the other sports that rely on the major money sports, football, basketball, in some cases baseball, to help? Then even if you're moving it, you still can't, one, guarantee that it's actually going to happen, and two, guarantee that you're going to recoup some of the revenue that you've lost in the fall. So they're all intertwined together, and we've already seen some schools that, you know, they're cutting some programs because of this, because of money and because of how they've been affected just by spring sports. So it's an interesting conversation that we have to continue to have, and I just don't know the answer. That's my thing. I get asked that all the time. Well, what do you think is going to happen? I'm like, I can't give you a straight answer because I just don't know. Because I don't know what this thing's going to look like in a month. You know, that's what's happened. It's been changing. I mean, it's, you know, yes, there are the death rates going down, which is a very good thing, but as cases, as we have more widespread testing, cases are going up. What does that mean? Does that mean that we have to, we're going to shut everything down again and be in an even deeper hole economically? Or does it mean that we're living with it? Or are they any closer to a vaccine? I don't know what any of that means. So, you know, I mean, we can't definitively say, all right, sports are actually coming back. I mean, the MLS is back tournament is starting this week, and you have Nashville SC that it's come out. They have 5 players test positive. Well, okay, so what does that mean now?
Are they playing on Wednesday? I mean, I can't imagine that they're playing on Wednesday.
I don't know. We have not seen. I mean, I've seen some tweets and reports that they could move it, but I think it's still very much up in the air on if that happens or not. Nick Markakis, who's a pretty well-known name for the Atlanta Braves, has opted out. David Price has opted out. I mean, more and more, and you've had Freddie Freeman, who's one of the best players for the Braves and a well-known player in the league, test positive for this. So what does that mean? I mean, are we actually there? This is an ongoing conversation that we've had of, okay, we see all the plans. We know that they have the idea of what they want to do, but are they actually going to get to that point? Or are you going to get to a point where either you have too many players testing positive or too many they're saying, I'm opting out, this is just not safe, and then it all goes away and you don't have it? I mean, we had Greg Williams on the afternoon show when I filled in on that, and he said that the NFL is going to play. He believes the NFL is going to play. I can give you a billion reasons why. Okay, I get that. Billions. Yeah, we've all talked about that. But if the players or coaches come out and say, yeah, but, then you're not going to play. So it's never ending. And I don't think we're going to, until I actually see a pitch thrown or a shot taken in basketball or, you know, players on the ice, players on the pitch, I can't really sit here and say, yeah, it's going to happen. I mean, look at NASCAR. They're back. They're not stopping. But the 7-time champion just missed his first race because he tested positive.
Yep. So, and the guy who filled in for him wrecked in the pits.
Yeah. Which, well, it wasn't really his fault. But, you know.
No, I'm just saying.
I mean, don't wreck.
Justin Allgaier. Justin Allgaier wrecked in the pits.
He did. Yeah, so that's where they're at.
The Tennessee Titans have sent out a letter to their season ticket holders.
Yep.
And it is said that basically it is unlikely that Nissan Stadium will be open to full capacity this fall. So they sent a letter to their season ticket holders saying this: the health and safety of our players, staff, and fans are our highest priorities as we explore ways to accommodate season ticket members at Nissan Stadium this season. We are in the process of working with the NFL, Metro Health Department, and healthcare professionals to determine how we can safely provide a first-class experience in the stadium this year. Now, as we talked about with Teron, they've already canceled games 1 and 4 of the preseason. And who knows? Their training camp is set to, Titans is set to begin July 28th. Their season opener is supposed to be in Denver on September 14th. Their home opener the next week against Jacksonville. But season ticket holders will have the ability to opt out of their 2020 season and apply payments to the 2021 season. Ticket holders will also be able to secure a refund for any amount paid towards the 2020 tickets. Season ticket holders on a payment plan, remaining installments have been suspended as of July 1st. So there you go.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't think they had a choice. I mean, at this point, you're a month and a half out. Well, who knows with the preseason what's going to happen there. But
I probably agree with, because when I said, what are they going to do? Teron said they'll probably compromise and do one preseason game. I tend to agree. I don't think it's going to be none, but I think it's going to be one. I don't think it's going to be two.
No, yeah, I think that's going to be the compromise. If the owners want two and the players want none, then they're going to go with one. Because it is important. I mean, how many times have we – I mean, we've talked to Derek about this over the years. I mean, he was a fourth-round pick and was a guy that he made the team by showing what he could do on special teams, but a lot of that happened in the preseason. So, I mean, it's important to some players to be able to show what they can do in a game. Yes, you learn a ton from practice and scrimmages and all of that. I mean, that how a player works and the fundamentals. But then there's something very different between practice and a game. And so seeing some of these guys in a game setting is going to be important for GMs and coaches to evaluate. And so I think it makes sense to have something in place, at least have one, and be able to, you know, be able to see what these players can do.
My This Is What I Know, which is coming up next to close out hour number two. By the way, we'll go east. We'll go to Knoxville. We'll bring in Vince Ferrara to start hour number three. Chris Domino in the fourth and final hour down in Atlanta. We'll talk about some of the news coming out around the Braves and MLB. Okay, I was just seeing raining. Looked like one of the MLS guys for, I think, Los Angeles is opting out.
I just saw that too, the MVP, the reigning MVP.
Yeah, wow.
See? And it goes back to the question that we've asked and all three of us have talked about for weeks now. Players are going to say they're not going, but is there a certain level or a certain caliber player that if they say they're not going, and there are several of them, like I'll go back to the hockey reference. If Sidney Crosby or Connor McDavid or some of the big stars say, yeah, we're out, what does that do? Does it do anything? Or, you know, it's just, okay, you're not going to have some superstar players that are going to be a part of this. I would assume that's what that means right now, but,
yep.
You know, you never know.
We'll come back. It's TWIC time. 615-737-1025. This is where we ask for your participation, and it's very simple. You just tell us what you know. It's very open-ended, and it's easy. What do you know? And we've got a prize attached to the best call that we get, 615-737-1025. You can also text those in as well at 615-737-1025. We'll come back and close out hour number two of Darren, Donick, and Chase next. All right, it's very simple. Just tell us what you know. Got a $25 gift card to Nashville Underground on the line, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. 1025, text or call in. And the best one, and all you have to do is tell us what you know, and win that $25 gift card. This is what I have. Chase, along the lines of, you know, what is this season going to look like at Nissan Stadium? After what I saw at the beach last week, I'm just not sure there's enough, you know, are diehard sports fans any different than people who love to vacation, people who love the beach? I would say probably not. And I've got to be honest. There were times I felt like people weren't even sure that they didn't even know. If you said COVID-19, they would have been like, huh? I don't even – what? What are you talking about? And so I kind of feel like there's going to be a lot – because you wonder like, okay, well, who would go? You know, if you have the opportunity to go, who's going to go to these games? I think after experiencing what I did this past week, my answer is probably a lot of people, if you give them the opportunity. Probably a lot of people are going to go. I just don't think there's a ton of – well, I shouldn't say that because I don't know. This is just a sampling. But I'm just wondering if sports fans have the same mentality as people on vacation. It's like, hey, we're here to have fun and – enjoy ourselves, and that's that. Didn't see, you know, and I look, I don't judge the pool or the beach because you're not going to wear a mask at the pool or the beach. But we did to go first half of the trip, and then, you know, latter part of the trip, we did go to some restaurants that we felt safe in. And I don't know. So I kind of feel like sports fans have the same mentality, right? Like they just want their sports and they'll just do whatever it takes. And people will be itching so much to get sports back in their life, live sports, that there's probably a whole lot of people that'll sign up and go. I really, because, you know, my initial thought was, who are we really talking to? Like, who's going to go? Who's going to feel comfortable in the stadium? And I guess what I'm getting at is, after coming back from vacation, I think a whole lot of people. That's what I experienced. So that's what I think I know, is that there's a whole lot of people that probably will go sit in stadiums and watch sporting events and feel just fine about it, because I saw a whole lot of people this past week that were just fine doing whatever the heck they wanted to, like nothing was going on. So that's what I know.
This is what I know. This was put out there. Bob Pockrass, who covers NASCAR for Fox Sports, put this out coming from his network. NASCAR viewership on Fox networks is up 8% since returning from its pandemic hiatus on May 17th. NBC also reported the race, they took over for 1 week, and then it's back to Fox, then back to NBC. It's kind of confusing. But their race from Indianapolis that was delayed, it was a later, they ended up getting it started later, but they got the full race in. It went into overtime. It was on NBC, and they had, in the coveted 18-49 demo, they had 3.1 million viewers, and then overall 4 million total viewers from 7 to 9 o'clock. The race was in that window. Those are Eastern time. So NASCAR continues to see an increase in ratings, and that is what I know, and other people should probably know that too. So I'm just throwing that out there.
I also know that Kevin Harvick likes the Brickyard.
He does. He does like the Brickyard.
He's won it three times.
He has. So back-to-back. And really, if you watch the ending of the race, I feel so bad for Denny Hamlin because Denny Hamlin was going to win. Denny Hamlin was going to win that race. He definitely had the best car and then popped a tire going into a turn and hit the wall hard. Some hard hits yesterday when those tires went down. But Harvick ends up holding on. And how about Matt Kenseth? 48-year-old Matt Kenseth coming home second in his return. So it was a good run by him and the 42 crew.
He would have been the oldest driver to ever win a race, any type of race.
At Indy,
yep. If he would have won.
Yeah, and I was pulling for him. I was like, I like Harvick. I know that Kevin Harvick has had a tremendous return to the season, as has Denny Hamlin, but I was pulling for Kenseth back there running second. So it was cool to see some of the rookies that had a good day as well. So fun race, fun ending, but Kevin Harvick gets his done with his fourth win of the year.
Yeah, Denny Hamlin could have – well, you know, if there would have been another caution, then it would have been interesting, but – if there wouldn't have been a caution, he would have cruised to the finish line.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely cruised.
Yep, absolutely. He had a very good car. They're hot right now. I mean, basically Kevin Harvick and Denny Hamlin just trading wins is kind of how this has been working as of late.
And now Denny Hamlin's resume reads like Kurt Busch until he finally won it. And I used to say it all the time about Kurt Busch. Great driver, but – and right now Denny Hamlin is the great driver, but
– yeah.
Great driver to never win.
Kyle Busch?
I mean Kyle. What did I say?
You said Kurt.
I meant Kyle. Yeah, Kyle. Yeah. Because Kurt had already won. But, yep. Yeah, Kyle, it was always great driver. Just keeps racking up tons of wins, but has yet to win a championship. And that's what people will remember if he doesn't figure out a way to knock down that door. Obviously, he's done more than just knock it down since I used to have those conversations. But Denny Hamlin is now in that category. Great driver, but – still hasn't won anything yet.
Yep. Mark Martin is another one that was always in that. Mm-hmm. Finished runner-up, I believe, five times in the points. Never won the Daytona 500, which Denny has three of those. So, I mean, you can at least say that you know, Denny doesn't have the championship, but he does have three Daytona 500 wins. So that's certainly worthy of discussion right there. But he's got to win that championship, and he's come close. He's come close a couple times in his career, but – he's one of those, too, that I thought he was really good early on, but as he's gotten older, he's gotten even better.
Yeah.
I think he's – some of these milestone wins have come later in his career. And, I mean, he's still got a long way to go, but as he's gotten older, it's like wine. He's gotten better with age.
No doubt about it. 615-737-1025. Barrett is on hold. What do you know?
Hey, this is what I know, guys. Years ago, I worked at a place called SIR, Studio Instrument Rentals, and, you know, they would deliver equipment to session players, and there was rehearsal rooms and storage lockers and rental of equipment and stuff. And we used to see Charlie in the studio all the time, and one time we were out there, and they called and said, we're done, but we had to wait an hour, like always. It always happens. And he said, let me tell you my SIR story. So they were down there years and years ago in the 70s, and they were rehearsing to record an album. Back in those days, you know, the band would go in and play live. pretty much, you know, especially in Nashville, they would just go in and cut their tracks. And he said they were rehearsing down there. They had the whole album ready, and the producer come in and said, okay, guys, I'm not going to sign off on this until we get a fiddle song. And so they wrote, Devil Went Down to Georgia in one night, down at the old FIR, in a lonely rehearsal room, all by themselves. Biggest multi-platinum smash hit, world famous, worldwide hit he ever had. And they never even thought about it. They did it under pressure because the producer wasn't going to record their album without that fiddle song. And they just come up with it in one night, had it down, and cut the track the next day. Rest in peace, Charlie. He was a heck of a gentleman.
Wow.
That's a great story.
Yeah, and set for life for that that one moment.
And obviously had, you know, other hits, but that being the signature song that he had, it's played over and over and will be. I know a lot of people will be jamming out to some Charlie Daniels after the news of his passing, but great story by Barrett. A couple on the text line, Darren. Nate says, this is what I know. If the Jimmy Johnson COVID test was a false positive, it would be pretty frustrating. We've seen plenty of them, so it could be true. It's a good question. I do believe they have confirmed that it is true. He's taken several. His wife tested positive and was showing some symptoms, so that's kind of how it, you know, how it happened. His kids, they've been tested. They've tested negative. But what was crazy is he did test for it and was negative, and then a day later it was positive. So it just continues to show you the unknowns with this virus. Doug says, this is what I know, and this happened a while ago, but if he's referring to Kyle Larson, but obviously the NASCAR driver who got busted using the N-word on a hot mic didn't get the memo of you can't say that. This is what I know. Doug from Nashville.
That was indeed Kyle Larson, and he is no longer in the 42 car.
Nope. Is it the Matt 42, Kenseth,
right?
Yep.
Yeah, Matt Kenseth was the one driving to a second-place finish yesterday. And quite honestly, I think Matt Kenseth has probably driven better than Kyle Larson to this point.
At times, yeah. I mean,
I know he came out of the gates hot. I think he's driven, what, 10 races now? Matt Kenseth?
I mean, they've had a lot in a short amount of time.
I think he had a couple of nice finishes right out of the gates. Then he had some lulls in between, and then obviously had the strong finish. But he's always raced well at the Brickyard, so it shouldn't surprise anybody.
Yeah. Yeah, so he's done well. And Larson, in the four races that he was in, had consistent finishes. But the problem with Larson was always he'd have consistent finishes, but he wouldn't win. And obviously Chip Ganassi Racing puts – a lot of money into his cars, and that's what he's looking for. He's looking for wins. So whether it's Kurt Busch or Matt Kenseth, who are teammates. So yeah, when they made that move, even though Matt had been out for about a year, I was like, if you put him in right equipment, he'll find a way to win. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if he ends up getting a win. And he was granted a waiver. Ryan Newman was granted a waiver that they didn't have to run all the races. They just had to be in the top 30 in owner points and win a race, and they could qualify for the playoffs. The same waiver has been granted to Jimmy Johnson as well. So even though he was in a position that if he only misses one or two races, he'd probably still be in the top 16. But obviously wins would help secure his spot in the playoffs.
Charlie Daniels, rest in peace, age 83. He played at Predators games. There's no doubt about it. I can remember him playing doing intermissions during one of the years in the playoffs. He played on the band stage during intermissions. I think it was 2012, maybe.
Oh, it was.
I mean, I know he did.
He played more recently than
that. No, I know. But I'm saying I remember that one. I mean, he did it many times. So, yeah. Had an opportunity to meet him a couple times. Really nice man. And thinking about his family here today. We'll come back. We'll start the third hour by talking with Vince Ferrara from WNML, the sports animal in Knoxville. We do that on the other side. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5, The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.